finish yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing asses for f***ing 10 years.
All right, you're welcome along to the GAR. This is the football show on a Monday with Conan and Keane as usual. And I was watching the Division 1 yesterday with serious interest for this bloody draw, Conan, because we talked about the four draws. Stevie McDonald did a four draw accumulator because he's just off his head completely. But we were so close. Kildare had three shots to draw it. Donegal had plenty of possession, just couldn't break down Galway, who were gone very defensive at that stage, and we got scuppered for our little draw plan.
Brendan Devaney screwed you right over.
Well, the one thing we learned from this, statistically, there's been no draws for the first two weekends. Next weekend is a banker. He's one of the all-time bankers for draws.
Wonder what Stevie's accumulator will look like next week.
Right, listen, want to start off here, boys, by talking about player welfare. And like, I mean, when you see the statistics of seven of the Kerry team on Saturday night and five more of the Mayo team are in the middle of a schedule that makes a mockery of player welfare, right? So you have, like, I mean, Clifford went off injured. Now, I don't know if that was down to fatigue or what it was necessarily down to. It was just a turn. You'd like to hear the injury before you'd be able to diagnose whether it's down to fatigue or not. Sean O'Shea was taken off. Tired, young lads tired. So they would have played Sigerson on the Wednesday, then they're playing Saturday night. They would have played against Donegal last weekend, then they'll play Sigerson on Wednesday night, and then they'll play Mayo. This is Donegal and Mayo with games in between, and now they're playing Sigerson again this Wednesday, and there's a game next weekend. This is wrong. Like, I mean, there's no other way of saying it without going, like, it's just wrong. Why are they doing this to young fellas trying to make their way on senior panels? Why are they trying to kill them? Why is this allowed? Why is the GPA standing idly by while young fellas are being flogged like this?
Yeah, it's been going on a long number of years, and it's amazing. Well, maybe it's not that amazing considering it's sort of GAA fixture planning, but it is sort of still in this day and age a bit mad that you have this sort of stuff happening. The best young players are always going to be in demand, you know, be it with their clubs. Colleges want them. They're on scholarships, a lot of the guys, so they have to perform, and they have to turn out for their college, and they have to give a reasonable effort there. And that's only right, because if you enjoy college's football at that age is a fantastic thing for lads, and really to be pulled into an inter-county setup as well is almost a bit much. Like, you kind of would think, God, there must be players beyond college age that are surely as good or should be playing at this time of the year. Maybe it's a case that they try and put a, if the competitions are running alongside each other, which they are and have been for a number of years, there should be a blanket ban on lads that are in third level playing with county teams or something. But you can't do that either, because you're penalising the county teams, and that's where all the revenue from the GAA seems to be coming from at the minute, or certainly that's the way they're going on about it. So very, very difficult scenario, and disappointing for the players, because I mean, these guys, as you correctly point out, they're mad to play for their county. They really want to make a breakthrough. They know that they have to do well at this stage of the season in order to keep maybe more established players out of the team. And it's very disappointing to see it. Like, I can remember my own situation as well. I had a similar thing where was playing, you'd be playing league matches at the weekend, you'd play Sigerson during the week. And I remember one week I you know, you were kind of struggling with injury. I got injured playing with the college, missed the league round with Meath, and you're the whole week kind of rehabbing twice a day to try and get back for, say, a Sigerson quarter final or semi final, and then you get back and you're just aggravating your injury again, and you're just flogging yourself to no real end game, playing on heavy pitches in serious, like, hard competition. Like, Sigerson Cup,
and
is
it's
a,
the
is
heavy pitches, it's the whole thing of this, like, I mean, it pulls the legs out of you.
But Sigerson is a savage competition, like, it's a really high level stuff, and you know, again, played at this time of the year, it's a very attritional style of play. It requires an awful lot of lads have to cover an awful lot of ground and stuff like that, and it is difficult on the body, and especially when you take travel into account as well. You could be, if you're in a Dublin college, you could be I know DIT are playing Tralee this week. I don't know where the game is.
It's in Austin Stacks Park. Yes, right. So, coming the whole way.
My God,
like, so that's Tuesday as well.
That's a fair trip down.
Tuesday.
So Clifford has four games in 10 days essentially. Then they're going to Monaghan next week. Like, you know, if he's playing these games now, if he's available, what's going to happen? Will they train? train him. Surely they still have to train with Kerry because they're trying to make an impression.
You don't know, every manager is different. You wouldn't imagine
and when do they get time
down
to go to their lectures, more importantly?
Even about the lectures, because you can bump off the lectures and everybody can balance that out. But I'd even say
there's a headline for you.
How can they even bond with their Sigerson teammates?
Yeah.
You're in college, you're a young fella, you're a teenager, you're new in college, you want to experience the college lifestyle. What chance do you get after a Sigerson match? I remember going up and playing St. Mary's of Belfast in a match with Maynooth, and it would have been all Alan Brogan, Alan Dillon, and I think Dillon actually told a story about, you know, me and Alan slagging each, just all the crack that we had on the bus on the way down. We're all getting drunk and having the crack, and it's stuff that even Alan Dillon remembered 15 years later, that bit of a laugh that we were having. Sure, these lads can't even have that kind of crack with their Sigerson teammates because they have a match with the county. This is the thing, and people always think I bring this back to the GPA, but it has to come back to the GPA, because you talk about player welfare and that's what they're supposed to be. Mm. I say they're a player welfare department of the GAA. Yes, they do some good work for player welfare, but this is more important, player welfare, than anything else. This is more important. The championship structure is more important. It has a knock-on effect and stress, overtraining, hip injuries. We're going to talk to Lee Keegan a little bit later in the show. Both hips operated on. Hip operations have gone out of control. And where is it all coming from? Is it coming from this kind of over-exertion at that age? And what is the fix for this? Well, the fix for this is to stop competitions overlapping. Stop this tug of war between Sigerson and Intercounty and play the Sigerson in January while we've a closed Intercounty season for pre-season training, and let the Sigerson go then. Get rid of those stupid competitions in January. They're a mess. They're no good. The teams are pulling out of them, and it'll give these young fellas a chance to play with their Sigerson teams without the pressure of having to play Intercounty. Is that not the easiest logical fix in the world? And this isn't even messing with the rest of the year. That if that scares the GAA too much, fix this time of year, because this is the conversations we're having every year. And I'm glad that Kerry have such high profile young fellas now that are actually shining a light even more on this, because this can get brushed at times, you know. And when you see the Cliffords and the Sean O'Shea's and these lads who are going to be superstars, and they're getting injured going off, and they're being taken off when you know that's not Sean O'Shea's not going to be taken off, tired, do you know, he was just tired. And it may be shining a light on how this can be allowed go on year after year. And it's the same in the Fitzgibbon. It's the very same in the Fitzgibbon. All the managers complaining about not Limerick, wasn't it 18 players or something that they're trying to balance? Why are they overlapping them? And the club. So your county manager being, we talked about this last week, county managers being punished because a club in their county actually gets to an All-Ireland semi-final or a final. They don't have them. How is that happening? How is that allowed? They're two quick fixes. Calendar year club and Sigerson, January free for Sigerson Fitzgibbon. Easy fix. Stop flogging the young lads. But seeing Clifford go off injured, it was a strange one. He actually got injured doing the move that I was talking about last week. I don't know if I'm going to name it the Clifford now, because he did it two or three times against Donegal, where he's breaking out and then he's doubling back and he looks for a little hand pass over the top. He breaks towards a player like he's coming on the loop, and then he just doubles back. Mm. And that's how he got injured. He doubled back so sharply, not sure what happened to him. And Stephen O'Brien wasn't actually on the same wavelength as him and gave the hand pass away, and then Clifford was gone. So he played on and scored a point. But it's hard to know whether that was a fatigue injury or whether doing the Clifford did it, or whether what the situation was with Clifford.
The Clifford sounds so natural. It's a real shame as well, even just all that's outrageous and stuff, but it looked like, you know, he had the better of Derek Cafferty, which we've seen a lot of full forwards get, and that could have been his real moment there to score 4 or 5 points and really announce himself and just start getting that confidence up. Then might not have been as confident after the game against Donegal, but that was his opportunity to go have a big night for Kerry, and that's the line drawn then. But even just missing out on that is a shame more than anything.
Yeah, we'll talk about Kerry here for a minute, lads, because we're going to concentrate on two other games in part two. And they fielded 5 players that lost to Mayo in last year's All-Ireland semi-final. It's incredible turnover, lads. And these are all good players. Like Micheál Burns, I really like him. He gives lovely little ball into the forwards, and he's a speedster. Jason Foley's very good. There's so many of these new players. Shanahan was really good the other night. Tigrish. They were all good. They were all really, really good the other night. I saw a tweet from Mark O'Shea saying, "What a victory on the road, considering how many we were missing." And that's fair enough, because we listed out in the league preview, I was saying Kerry could struggle with all these older players missing. And now I'm thinking, who of those players that are missing are guaranteed to get back in? David Moran, yes. I can't think of one more that's a guaranteed starter from all those fellas that were missing. Donica Walsh, maybe, but he's pushing on in years. Who are all these lads missing that are going to waltz back in? They're not going to waltz back in.
No, they're going to find it very difficult. You know, James O'Donoghue is one who's obviously a big name player, but he's had so many injury problems. And when you factor in at the end of last season, he was dropped for the replay against Mayo. So.
And Fitzmaurice has dropped him before as well. Fitzmaurice doesn't fully trust James O'Donoghue, I don't think.
No, he doesn't seem to. And when you have Sean O'Shea there at 11, Sean O'Shea offers, you know, greater physicality, and he probably gets through much more defensive work. I mean, the ground he covered was just phenomenal. Every time Kerry lost possession, he was getting back down to his own 45. And then when they were breaking on the counter-attack, you could see him. He was really trying to drive back up the field again. So, yeah, look, it's going to be very difficult for any Kerry guy to force his way back into the team. They'd probably be looking at a couple of defenders maybe to come back in and possibly strengthen there. But
it's hard to know even who these lads are, because Peter Crowley, Killian Young, Griffin, or all these fellas, like, they've had their chance, and Kerry are weak at the back. I think, I know it's maybe too many bringing in, you know, especially for Championship football, but they're all performing well. Like, I know it's only the league, but these lads are flying fit, and we can't judge how fit other teams definitely are. But
Kerry looked to me to have stolen a bit of a march on some of the other teams. They seem to be in
they're flying it.
Really good shape, yeah. And look, as you would expect, these young guys are trying to make a breakthrough onto a Kerry team. You would expect them to be in really good shape, and they look like a team that have put in an awful lot of work. And look, when other teams catch up on them a bit like that, you know, will Kerry have a bounce later on in the year? They probably will, because they'll be bringing in so many players, or they certainly will have a strength and depth to their squad. But they've been very impressive, and it was a really good game the other night, and fairly impressive from the Kerry boys. They stood up to pretty much everything Mayo threw at them in terms of the physical approach to the game and everything like that. You know, you saw Gavin Crowley was giving Aidan O'Shea his fill of it you know, he wasn't backing down.
No.
Now, I know the Kerry boys were a little bit naive. Shanahan was a little bit naive, but you'd have to say Killian O'Connor was using all the tricks in the book there too.
Wasn't a yellow card that.
No,
that was not a yellow card.
But Killian O'Connor is just he's a master at these sorts of things. Yeah, he's pest.
The Johnny Cooper of the forwards in the country.
I think we called him a genius last year.
He's a black arts genius up there. You know, unbelievable to win some of the frees that he won. Look at. A referee possibly could have seen them. I just think he's unbelievably obvious with it. But he seems to get away with it. And look, Kerry boys will learn from that as well. They'll have Shanahan in particular will have learned from that one, I'd say.
Yeah, Johnny Cooper versus Killian O'Connor. That's one we want to pay in to see, isn't it? Who can piss the other one off more?
Yeah, well, who can con the referee more?
Who gets sent off? Who gets the other person sent off unfairly?
It's nothing to do with football. It's just who can con the ref.
What a matchup that would be. Yeah, we want to see that, don't we?
But that, like, it's interesting because Morley and Peter Crowley are two boys I would have thought were their bankers, like, in the last couple of years coming and the way they came to the fore. But now you look at that half back line, the way Gavin Crowley's getting forward, like, just bombing and bombing. Obviously, Paul Murphy's doing it, Ronan Shanahan can do it. Is that the way Kerry are going now? Thinking, let's get these boys up the field and match what, say, Mayo can do?
Yeah, well, having them, I can understand Crowley, Manmark, and Aidan O'Shea. I can understand that and leaving the middle. I criticised them last week for leaving the middle. Do you know, marking someone who's just floating back and not a huge threat. But, like, I mean, when you, I think Shanahan and Murphy, I think they'll start the championship. I think they're tigerish two players. I do think they need to hold the centre a bit more. I think Crowley, that's all grand. If you have two, like, Shanahan and Murphy are all over the field. Yeah, you can't have them all AWOL.
I thought Jack Barry covered that zone quite well on a number of occasions. He made a few interceptions in the Kerry defence. I think where they're at risk is obviously on the counter-attack when, you know, their midfielders are gone forward and they just don't have that cover. And perhaps, you know, with game time together, you'll get that balance right in midfield. Yeah. I certainly thought Jack Barry did that much better this weekend than they had done last weekend, in terms of just, he's very solid in terms of his position of play, and maybe he just has a little bit more experience in terms of having a season under his belt last year. I thought he filled that pocket quite well.
And that's the answer.
Occasions.
That's obviously the answer, is get a defensive midfielder to sit back there if your centre back is a bit fond of wondering as well. On a more important note, lads, the Kerry jerseys, what was your verdict on this? They grew on me over the course of the game. When I saw them first, I was like, what the hell is this? But it was a bit when I saw Kerry wearing the blue jersey, which I ended up absolutely loving. I was a bit like, what is, I don't like change. I like to be eased into these changes. It was a huge shock to the system, but the goalkeeper jersey is class, the black with the gold, and it grew on me after a while.
Keane, go ahead.
I have no real comment on it.
What's your favourite county jersey?
Like, I mean, this is a terrible conversation. Back to the analysis. No, look, it's grand.
The Dublin one's definitely the best jersey.
Dublin's nice. Carlow's easily the worst. I think we'll all agree on that. Yeah. Carlow just need to do something with that
jersey.
Change
the colours, that's what they need to do.
Yeah, change everything. Just rip up the script and start all over again. What was I going to move on to? Oh, yeah, the pet hate of mine, lads, and Mayo were at it the other night, and... Like, I mean, I don't think there's any place in this. You can tell me I'm overreacting if I am, but this is one of these old tricks. On a cold night, freezing cold, the other team, you hear their studs going down the corridor and they're gone on out, and you get a knock on the door and your manager says, F them, we'll wait in here for a minute, and he continues on to talk, and you're basically leaving the other team out in the cold, and that's all well and good until the shoe's on the other foot and you're the one out in the freezing cold. And funnily enough, it's never talked about this potentially happening, so players are out in the field wondering what the hell are we supposed to do here. So you might call for a ball and kick it around amongst each other, the halfback line might say, here, we'll run across the field, and everybody's just kind of confused as to what are we doing out here, how do we act, are we supposed to stay warming up?
Because
you can say, let's get the trainer in and do a bit, and then the other team runs out, and you know what I mean? It's just confusion, and it's unnecessary, and it's bad sportsmanship from the team leaving the other team out, especially in those conditions.
I don't know. It's a funny one. It seems to happen quite a lot.
Is there sanctions for it? I don't know. In Croke Park there definitely would be.
If you're not out 10 minutes after you're supposed to be out, then you're supposed to have forfeited the game. But I don't see that.
Well, what you could do then is maybe lock the door in the opposition's dressing room and don't let them out at all.
But technically you have 25 minutes then for half time. That's a problem.
It's like, so 15 you know. Minutes, no?
Yeah, but then, if then you're not out, 10 minutes until it's forfeited.
Oh, okay.
So essentially they're saying you can have 25 and you can get away with it that. Have they just tightened that up and said if you're not out within 20 minutes then the game's forfeited?
Yeah, but it's bad. I think it is bad sportsmanship.
It can be on occasion, I think. Look, it depends on the motive. Every time, everything can be kind of different. Like sometimes you might have a guy in who's getting a bit of treatment or somebody who's getting stitched up or something at half time and
I'm talking about the scenarios where you say F them, and I'm sure you've heard it. I've heard that lots of times.
It does happen a bit, but it most likely happens on evenings like that, where, you know, you'd often see it that you'd have a guy standing outside, he's waiting to see are the opposition gone out before he sends his own team out, and you've both teams at the opposite ends of the opposite ends waiting for each other to go out. So look, at it, to me it shouldn't make much of a difference, but it can, I suppose, cause a little bit of confusion where, you know, a team maybe are coming out. I think oftentimes a team who's behind, it can work both ways. Sometimes the manager is in there and he just says, lads, that was rubbish, now get back out there, and takes 2 minutes and fires them back out, and they're standing outside waiting. Other times teams are waiting, they're saying, okay, we're going to hold it, the manager is waiting to fire the team up right before, you know, so that they're straight out onto the pitch and ball thrown up. So that's maybe sometimes the psychology behind it from managers, where they're looking to just get that small little bit of an edge, and if they can disrupt the opposition a little bit by having them waiting out there for 30 seconds or a minute or two, you know, so that they maybe have a chance to have cooled down a little bit, or that the message from their manager is, you know, when it comes out, when you go out on the pitch and it's ringing in your ears, you can get straight into things. But look, I think at that level, at intercounty level, I don't think it's a factor. I think that teams are so well prepared, or should be so well prepared, that I don't think it's a factor.
Yeah, and it wasn't a case, because I actually text Billy Joe Padden, because he was doing the co-com with Air Sport. I was asking him, were Kerry out early or were Mayo out late? Because sometimes, like you say, like if things have gone well, lads, more of the same, get back out there, and suddenly you're out kicking around and it's not the other team's fault. But it was Mayo. The linesman actually had to go in to get Mayo out. It was Mayo that were actually late. So
I tend to believe that if guys come with the right attitude and the mental focus is there, then anything that happens before the ball being thrown in and after the whistle being blown is totally irrelevant.
It's noise, yeah.
It's all noise and guff, and really, like, at that level, no, I don't see it as a factor.
Is there a benefit to playing the game on your own terms and just, you know, we'll go out when we're ready? And
That's the kind of stuff that's said in there.
Like, yeah, I mean, is there some sort of benefit to that psychological thing where it's like we're in control of the situation?
I think all that psychology stuff. Now, I'm a cynic when it comes to sports psychology and all that kind of stuff, because like what Keane was saying, if I was switched on in my own head, it didn't matter what stuff was being said to me. That's where that was my battle. Am I up for this in my own head? Have I got that burning desire, not just on the day, all that week? Am I up for this? And it doesn't matter what kind of nonsense is being said to me. And sports psychologists used to distract me and piss me off when I was in the zone myself.
I would have found kind of the same thing on occasion, that if you're up for it and you're ready for it, then there's nothing, you're single-minded, nothing else matters. But, you know, sometimes maybe you're not that up for it. And that's where I don't think anybody saying anything really makes a difference. It could be a lad just on the opposition just pissing you
like
off.
Like we said, last week.
And that can get you going. But sometimes you can just be a bit flat going into a game for whatever reason. And but that's more like this, at this level, there's nobody really at that, because if that's kind of the way your mind has gone, it's going to be obvious from the way you're training. I think management will pick up on these things. It's so forensic now, and everybody's analysed so much that even the slightest drop off in your statistics if you're usually covering X amount of distance in a match, or your speed is just off, or you're not getting the same possessions as you ordinarily would. Management have all this information readily available, and a guy is just pulled. He's having an off day. Someone else is coming straight in.
Yeah, okay, no, that's fair enough. Right, two more stories before we go into chat about two of the games. Is Leash manager John Sugrue, lads, he was on Midlands 103 Sport, and he said he needs to see more application from Donny Kingston in training, which it's a tricky one, because Donny hadn't committed this year. He'd been playing basketball. Now he's back in the squad, and John has gone public a little bit soon, in my opinion, about calling Donny out on his training, because it's a really difficult one. Because, like, I mean, Leash need Donny Kingston. Like, he is, like, if you talk about, he's world class, he's Ireland class, he would make any team in the country if he's switched on, and if he's, you know, ability wise he'd make any team, right? So if Donny might not fancy training like another flyer would fancy training, but how do you balance that out? Do you say everyone has to train the same way, or do you say, Donny, we need you on board, give it, like, you say, okay, there's two different ways of looking at this. Say the running, Donny will not be at the top of those runs, so I would give Donny a pass on some of those runs once the game starts and Donny's vocal and Donny's, you know, being one of the main men, because Donny's never going to be a whippet that's flying around the field. That's not what you want him for. Now, you want his body language to look like he is trying. Like, Donny could play the game a bit more if John thinks his application isn't great. You can fake it in training and make it look you're trying that little bit harder than you might be. I've done it loads of times, like shake your head during the sprints like you're actually reaching. You're like, you know, there's loads of things, listen, you can fake it if you really want, and that's not what you want on a squad. But at the same time, Donny maybe needs to play the game a little bit, and John maybe needs to understand, how am I going to handle this situation, because we desperately need him. So look, it's not an easy one.
No, it's a difficult scenario, actually, because Donny Kingston has been brilliant for Leash over a number of seasons, and they've kind of been heavily reliant on him for getting the large majority of scores and being able to produce a bit of magic up front when things aren't happening for them. I'm not too sure. What age would Donny Kingston be now? He's probably late 20s.
Oh, he'd be 27 maybe.
Like, I mean, this guy is playing county football probably since he's 18, 17. You know, he's playing...
He played in 08 with me.
Like, he's playing a long, long time at that standard. And to be honest, he probably is just a little bit fed up or worn out. And his motivation for playing Division 4 football maybe is not what it is, or not what it needs to be. And a guy like Donny Kingston, like, sometimes a new manager comes in and he's starting from scratch and it's all new and exciting for him. But you have a guy like Donny Kingston who's played for 10 years at this stuff. Like, you know, sometimes a bit of understanding from a manager to say, okay, look, I'm just using him as the example here we're talking about. He's not up for it at the minute. He's struggling to motivate himself to come to train, and he doesn't have the hunger that we'd want him to have, or that, you know, the rest of the team needs him to have. So you manage your way through that. As a manager, you know, you talk to the guy and you try and get an understanding of what's up with him.
Because he didn't want to commit, so now he's in and he might not be maybe training as much as he wants. I think it's too early for John to call him.
It's a big wrench. Like, it's a massive decision for Donny Kingston, say, to turn around. Like, he's known nothing but Leash football. from underage straight through into the seniors and always high expectation and everything on him. And I'm sure when he was a young lad growing up, he was expecting, you know, he saw Laois teams win at Leinster's and everything like that, and he probably had a reasonable amount of success underage. I know he played in an All-Ireland under 21 final when I think he was only 15 or 16. So, I mean, there's maybe the realisation over a number of years that they're not going to get to that standard. So, I mean, where's the motivation for Donny Kingston to be playing Division 4 football? I mean, if he can't find that motivation and just the enjoyment of going out and playing football, well then, it's very hard for somebody to put that into him. But I think a manager needs to have a bit of understanding. I would actually say it's pretty disrespectful for a manager to be saying that about a guy who's played county football for his county for 10 years and done what he's done and been as good as he has. And I've never heard any reports of Donny Kingston having, you know, ill discipline. Whenever I've seen him playing for Laois, he's sometimes a target man forward in there. You don't expect him to be buzzing around the place all the time, but I've never seen him pointing the finger at his teammates or doing anything that would be an obvious thing to say that he's having a go at other people.
He's a class act. There's no doubt about that.
I think it's just a bit disrespectful to be publicly saying something like that about a fella. I think you could say a number of things. You could say, look, at his form just isn't you know, where it needs to be at the minute. But that doesn't sit well with me.
No, when I read it, didn't sit well with me either, Conor. Now, he was obviously asked about him because Donny is our main man, and he's only back in, and he hasn't featured yet. So he was asked about it. But like, I mean, surely there's an answer there. Say Donny needs to get to the level of fitness it's early days. We're just going to get Donny back to the level of fitness everyone else has, and then. But to question his application, I don't know. Like, I mean, there's two ways this could turn out. Donny can react well to it, and it's the best. This is all hindsight stuff, and he doesn't react well to it as a mistake. I like to call things before you see the outcome and say, personally, I think it's way too soon to call Donny publicly out on his application.
To treat everybody differently. Treat everybody equally, treat them differently. Like, that's, you know, yeah. Some people know it's not a Hollywood film sort of mantra where they draw a line and everybody has to get over. I think you do draw a line and you do want people over that sort of set of standards, but you have to help some people over it, and special players need to be treated a bit more special, I think, and you need to reach out a hand to Donny Kingston and say, we're not going to do much without you, so here's my hand and come over and I'll help you get over like these standards.
And I think players understand that. Like, you'd want to be a real weasel on a team to go to a manager and say, Donny's not trying as hard as me, you know, or Donny doesn't seem to. You, buddy, you need Donny more than you come Sunday. Yeah. Like, so, I mean, I think players understand. It's a difficult one because none of us have managed, and you don't want to seep through. If he's being disruptive and being obviously stagging and a face on him, that's fair enough.
Then he's not useful, then you get rid of him.
But if he's struggling in training and maybe you think he's a bit extra, let him improve his fitness a little bit. Let's see how this pans out before. I don't know.
I think it is very early days. Like, if the guy was, you know, putting serious thought into whether he'd commit or not, he's obviously a little bit later back to the setup than everybody else. And look, maybe we're hanging on, you know, he's using the word there, application, but look, we all know what, you know, the correct language to use. I think if you're a manager of an intercounty team, you need to be aware of that. You're dealing with the media, you're putting a message out there publicly. It just doesn't sit that well with me, a comment like that, even whether it's true or not, because even if it is true, I don't see the benefit to it. I don't see the benefit in effectively telling the Laois public, this lad's not trying. Because that's what he's saying. Yeah. He's saying, this lad is not trying. How does that benefit anybody long term?
Yeah.
It doesn't benefit the relationship between the player and the manager.
It's like your last straw. It's almost like your desperation move.
But if you're gone that far, your decision should be made for you. You don't need to tell the world about it. Like, I just think that's just unacceptable. I don't see why a manager would ever criticise his players like that publicly through the media. I think just if you have a problem with the player, you deal with it there and then. And if you feel like the player is you can't bring him back in stream, or he's not falling in line with what you want, then you remove him from the panel. But you don't. I just don't understand why someone would go down that route. Doesn't make sense.
Is this part of the strategy, though? Like, you see some of the more experienced players now on the bench, and, you know, now he's calling out one of their best players. Is this what he's doing? I think probably because he can get away with it a bit more in Division 4. They'll still win matches, and he can just sort of set a rallying cry for the bigger boys. You're not going to get in this team unless you do that. Is that what
maybe
he's doing?
Maybe it's that bigger picture thing, and he sees, like I said, Suguru was a physio for 2 years, so he's seen the inner workings of the Laois squad. So maybe there's method to his madness. And like we said, none of us have been managers, you don't know what.
Well, as you say, like you did mention it before, perhaps he has a relationship with these guys where he knows he can say this to them and say this about them, and that's the difference. Like, I mean, look, I know he said he's a new manager in. Like, if he didn't have any relationship existing with the players, I would think it was bizarre. But sometimes when there's a trust built up between people, you know, you can have a go. You can just say it about them. Because you say, look, I'd say it to your face. This is what's happening. This is the truth. I'm not going to make up fairy tale stories for everyone else. If people are asking me why you're not in the team, I'm going to tell them why you're not in the team. And it's up to you to sort it out. Now, if they have that relationship, well then, you know, brilliant.
Yeah.
You know, that maybe is the right approach. And sometimes, you know, your manager doesn't have to be your friend. You don't have to like your manager. In fact, sometimes you can play better football when you really dislike your manager, because you're playing with a bit of anger in your system, and you're playing with some, you know, I don't care what he says. I don't care whether he likes the way I'm playing. I don't care. I'm not doing this to please him. I'm doing this because I want to play well for me and to help the team win. And sometimes that can give you the bit of fire, that bit of motivation. So it could be a masterstroke from Suguru, and hindsight is 20/20.
Well, it's an interesting one, but we'll call it before it pans out. Just quickly, because we're going way over time, something I always like to say on this podcast, but Padraic McKeever, because you're not going to be here for performance of the weekend, Keane, Lee Keegan's taking your place. What about Padraic McKeever? What are we talking here? 6 points, 3 from play on his debut.
Yeah, well, Podge is a really good player. He's
mead centre half forward.
Played with Simonstown Gaels, back to back county champions in Mead, and he was man of the match in the last two county finals.
What age?
He's mid-20s, 26.
So he's been around a while.
Yeah,
then.
Like he was on.
I'm
the
not pan- as excited about him.
No,
now.
he was on the panel a few years ago and just maybe didn't get a lot of game time and picked up an unfortunate injury. Which curtailed him. But he's got plenty of ability. He's probably one of the more natural forwards in the Mead forward line. You know, they have a lot of guys that are good runners and technically wouldn't be the best. He's technically pretty good. He's a decent free taker. Nice bit of style about him. And yeah, he's taken his club form into the Mead game. Now, look, it was against Clare, who, you know, didn't perform to their best on the day, but very positive start because he's very inexperienced at county level, so he's a big bonus for Mead.
Yeah, so we'll keep our eye out for him, and we might talk about Mead a little bit more on Thursday or next Monday, because they destroyed Clare, and again they've struggled to get out of Division 2 for so many years that it might be nice to see the Royals get back up in Division 1 and come straight back down. Right, okay. we'll be back in part 2. Dearie, great to finally get to interview you.
Yeah? Oh, really, yeah. why is it great?
Why do you not do many interviews?
I don't know, really. I wasn't being asked to do a whole pile.
Really?
Yeah. Have you ever rang me? I know we spoke about the defensive side of things. If you're coming in and you want to be the Woolly Parkinson and just play for myself, and an inter-county corner forward isn't just hatching inside either. Unfortunately for you, Woolly, it won't last forever. You can ask ex-players that. You can ask you know that yourself, Woolly.
Yeah, mine never started at all.
Yeah, well, that's neither here nor there.
All right, we'll start with Tyrone and Dublin. Both of you saw this whole game. I saw highlights of it. I saw Mickey Hart was quoted after game, and he said, if we played like that against anyone else tonight, we'd have got 2 points. Is that a fair analysis?
Possibly. I don't know. It's difficult to say. I mean, Tyrone had enough possession to win the game. Look, there was only 5 points in at the end, and Tyrone conceded a calamitous, almost an own goal, where Niall Morgan played a short kick out to Padraic Hamsey, went for the return, and inexplicably, I don't know how, Hamsey just, he was under no pressure, there was
just
no tackle.
True, he was wrecked maybe,
yeah,
he was just tired.
Yeah. Look, just a really bad error. And
can we just point out Morgan did nothing wrong there?
No, absolutely.
It was actually a really good ball because no room for error.
And going for a return was move when Dublin are pushing up, because McGeaney tried this with a fly goalkeeper at the time, and it's a solution to the press, that when you get that short one, you create the extra man, everyone's manned up, then someone has to come to you and you got that extra spare.
If the ball was delivered into Morgan's hand, which it should have been because there was no pressure on Hamzy, he had broken the line. He was out he was out towards his half back line under no pressure. So no, I wouldn't blame Morgan at all. And in fairness, even the clip to Hamzy, it wasn't as if he put it down at his ankles that it took him too long to gather it and he was panicking. Like it was just a complete unforced error. And I suppose that's what I don't know, against Dublin teams seem to make these mistakes and Dublin never make them. I think there's definitely a psychological thing with teams against Dublin that they just feel under pressure. They feel like they have to be perfect. And the reality is they don't. Like you don't have to be perfect to beat Dublin. I think the Dublin were not that impressive the other night with a lot of what they did. Like everything they do is quite simple. There's nothing spectacular about it, but they kind of recycle possession when they need to. Dublin didn't kick a wide in the second half, but that's because they keep working the ball into these positions where you nearly can't miss. So they're unbelievably efficient and they've worked their game to that type of efficiency, which means at times they're not as exciting or dynamic as they would have been in the past, where you'd have a guy who'd, you know, where they just really cut loose on a team. They're not kind of doing that. Now, I know it's league football, so when the ground firms up, they'll be able to take it through the gap, but they're playing very much percentages football, though, and they're doing it quite well.
They run it a lot more. Their kicking game has gone a little bit, but I think that they're obsessed with not giving away possession. And, like, I mean,
massively,
that's their whole thing.
Massively so. Completely obsessed with not giving away possession. No turnovers.
And that's not a bad, like, that's
no,
a good
this
thing.
This is their style of play, and they're to be commended for it because they're excellent at doing it. But Dublin played very defensively. In the second half, they pretty much played with two sweepers whenever they were out of possession. Johnny Cooper being one of them. Like their wing backs generally seemed to tuck in. And Tyrone left nobody. You know, oftentimes Tyrone didn't actually have a focal point in there. In the first half, they did, and they played some lovely crossfield pass and got some lovely scores. And the inside men, Lee Brennan had a decent game, kicked a couple of nice scores. And
finally.
And Conor McCallisky was good too.
6 points.
And Tyrone were at their most effective when they were able to kick that diagonal ball in the first half. And that's where Dublin changed it at half time. You know, they had Cooper dropping back in. So it pretty much, now he was doing it to a certain extent in the first half, but they were just a little bit better at it in the second half, where the Dublin guys that dropped back in, they held on the wing side, if that makes sense, so that they were a serious obstacle to that crossfield pass. And when Tyrone were kicking into the breeze, the guy in possession was just thinking, no, it's not on, it's too big of a kick, I'm not going to make it. So Dublin just made sure that they were really tight at the back, limited the opportunities for Tyrone, and pretty much banked on the fact that Tyrone weren't going to be good enough to break them down. And that's what happened. Tyrone had a number of pot shots at goal, some of them from decent positions. I know there was a breeze, but Tyrone should have scored a lot more than they did in that second half. I mean, they took shots at goal, but they were inside the 45. I wouldn't see them as being complete pot shots. I would have expected that at that level players would have been able to get them, particularly with the volume of training. Like, I know it's early season, but these guys have a huge amount of training and work done.
Tyrone have, especially. Yeah, so they played their strongest team.
I would have expected them to clip over a few more. So in terms of their overall display, Tyrone were pretty good. They were let down quite badly by their finishing, and they were let down badly by just that one unforced error. But overall, like, Tyrone were pretty decent, but Dublin are just better than them.
Yeah, Dublin are better than them. Tyrone shape then, Conan, they clearly left McCallisky and Brennan inside.
Yeah.
They gave some lovely ball in. Like, I mean, that's a departure from just leaving Bradley inside. Now, in fairness, they do hit Bradley with those same diagonal balls, and they're smart and they've got a good football brain. Now there was two of them left in there. And from some of the scores that you could see from the highlights, there was a presence on the half-forward line
as well.
Well,
that was the big thing, yeah, wasn't it? They had two in. They had that half-forward line outlet, and then they had the ball in that area where they could launch better balls inside of the two boys, and that's where they got those. Like, those diagonal balls in were just 30-40 yards, just nice balls bouncing in front of the two boys inside. And
it was a nice thing to see just from the highlights, Tyrone doing that. Yeah. It really just was.
But, and like, they had the runners coming through as well off the shoulder. It was much better attack and play from Tyrone, but the only problem, I think, you know, they can definitely play that way and they probably should. But the problem is that they probably ran out of legs in against Dublin, and when you're trying to track them up and down the pitch and you're going man for man at the back, it just became far too open then in the second half and became too easy for Dublin, who just wait for you to make a mistake, almost like Nadal playing tennis. Like, they'll make the mistake first, and they do.
Yeah, well, like, it's amazing. The shape of the game can be just so bizarre sometimes when you're watching these matches, because no matter what Tyrone wanted to do, they can't allow, like, when Dublin are in possession, a lot of their players just go and make these runs forward, and they're dragging guys out of position, which they don't really want to go. And the unfortunate thing is, if you were marking, say, Philly McMahon or Mick Fitzsimons or something, you're playing in the Tyrone inside forward line, you're thinking, I have to stay up here for the team. I have to give us this outlet. If we turn the ball over, someone needs to be up here. And then you're kind of going, well, I can't just let Fitzsimons off up the field, because if Dublin have the overlap, they won't give it away. They'll work at the length of the field. So I think your team structure needs to be such that there's that understanding. We've spoken about this loads of times before, that you have to have that understanding that the whole team knows, okay, the two lads are staying up there, or the four lads are staying up there. They're not crossing our halfway line, or they're not coming back inside our 45. So lads, you have two or three wing forwards, you have your midfielders, and you have your six defenders. Lads, your job, no matter how many men you're up against, is to defend against the attacking wave inside our 45. And as soon as we turn the ball over, lads, you can kick it to the link up front. And that sometimes maybe, because Dublin are conservative as well, I think if you decide to do that and say, right, let them off, I'm not following off after you, I'm staying here, and when we turn it over, I'm going to stick the ball in the net and you're going to be made an idiot of. Dublin are aware of this, and Dublin guys won't bomb on, because they just are clever enough now. They've been caught by that too many times. So I think sometimes you just have to be brave and say, well, we're playing our game here. We're not going to go down the route of just following ye lads all over the pitch and play the game on your terms and run our legs into the ground. Mm. Because every single season, Dublin have been playing to September. Most teams are finished in August, July. So Dublin always have that bank of fitness, and it's built up over, it's accumulation over 3, 4, 5 seasons. So they have, every team has a huge amount of catching up to do on Dublin, and you see it so often that it's near the end of a game and they just can't do it. Dublin are efficient in their use of the ball. They just maintain their energy. So I think a team, it's just going to require a well-organised team to just be brave and play the game their way, instead of constantly playing the game on Dublin's terms.
Yeah, I think that. What about Tyrone's defending when they didn't have the strength in numbers? Did they have those fellas able to man up? I saw their cornerback, was it McGeary? That was taken off. No, McKernan was taken off for McGeary.
They weren't bad. They weren't bad. Like, I mean, Dublin were in a bit of trouble, and Kieran Kilkenny got a brilliant goal, but that was just a one-on-one contest. Yeah, terrible goal to concede, really, where it's just a one-on-one contest and the ball is...
That was terrible defending. In. Terrible. He was in front or beside Kilkenny. Yeah. Kilkenny was just clever.
Kilkenny just muscled him out. And it's the sort of goal that you shouldn't concede.
Probably should have been a Tyrone free in the middle of the field at that stage, yeah, but right. But the defending,
but it was very harmless defending. Yeah,
it was harmless.
You have to be goal side there.
Yeah, but there was nothing wrong with their defensive structure. That's the point that I'd be making. Like, it wasn't like it was a 2-on-1 inside or anything like that. There's nothing wrong with that. That's just, and this is why teams get very negative. They concede a goal like that, and all of a sudden they're saying, oh, we didn't have cover in there, we need to put three defenders now in here, and then they completely take away from any chance they have of attacking the game or trying to win the game. So it's a fear first approach, whereas they should just say, look at lads, we're going to have to play football here. That's a one-on-one contest. You know, if you lose the contest, we're going to concede a goal, so you need to be better in that one-on-one contest. Don't expect me to bring three defenders to stand in around you and hold your hand. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, we have to win the game.
I think traditionally Tyrone have those dogged defenders. They've mad will to win, and they've mad kind of desire, and that's what these defenders need. Tough defenders, and they have them, I think.
Kilkenny was good there. It was just a 50-50 contest. The defender probably just committed to the ball when maybe he should have taking the view that, look, Kilkenny is bigger than me, stronger than me. If I get into a wrestling match with him here, he's going to win possession, so I'll stay down, and at least if he does win it, I'm still here goal side of him, and he doesn't have much of a chance. I'll concede a point, worst case. So look, I wouldn't blame the Tyrone defender hugely for it. He should have done a bit better, but look, when you're up against that quality of opposition, sometimes you're just going to get beaten to a ball.
Yeah, so all in all, usual from Dublin, not much more to add. Outstanding kind of machine at this stage, where you kind of know exactly what you're going to expect from them. They're just unbelievably
so
impressive.
Fast and, as well.
Yeah, the athleticism that they have.
They've mixed it up a bit though. Kilkenny played a lot of the game in the inside line as a sort of a focal point of the attack, and he was quite good. He scored a really good point off his left foot as well. Very sharp, you know, looked like a really sharp inside forward, which we haven't seen from him in a large number of years, almost since his underage career.
He's built like a bull now, isn't he?
Very
he's really
strong,
bulked
yeah.
up. Like, even when he scored that goal, he came out and just pushed it Tyrone Fehender. Like, this man's not on the field to make friends. This man's on the field to win for Dublin. And the Dublin lads are like, and there's a psychology to that stuff too. Do you know? Like, I mean, not like you don't see it at inter-county level, two lads having a chat. Like, you might years ago in a league match or something, there'd be a smell of drink off the two of you. And you could, wasn't it Sennan talking about Tomás O'Shea? But you won't talk to a Dublin player off the ball, I'm sure. And that's a psychology. But, like, I mean, Kilkenny just running out, a bull of a man, pushes the Tyrone lad. That's what was being done to Dublin for a lot of years, and Dublin are doing that now.
And I still think everybody hates him as well, which, well, they do, so it's easy to sort of fire him up and not make friends. But Kilkenny does need to be closer to goal. I think he's much more effective and dangerous there, and they don't need him being selfless out the field. You got enough boys who can do that.
Yeah, well, your man Brian Howard is fitted in seamlessly there, covers the ground well, didn't do anything stupid in possession. Very mature performance for a young player coming in there. So look, the Dublin have it kind of every way, and Colly Baskell, when he came on as well, very lively. He's a really good player, and he's a good addition to them. I know he's involved last year as well, but he's a really good player. And look, they've great strength and depth, like all the guys that came on late in the game. The joy for any forward, I mean, to be a sub forward for Dublin is just like it's the handiest job in football. It's almost like being a sub goalkeeper in soccer for Man City or something. You're picking up your paycheck every week. I mean, they come on and look like heroes every
Teams
time.
Teams are worn down and they're just like they're flying it. So to sum up, Tyrone have a bit of a plan B, positive, considering that's the first time we've kind of seen them try something new to get, Dublin got a late goal, so they're very competitive right throughout the game, trying to play a little bit different, and you'd have to say that's a very positive thing. Just quickly before we move on from this, Brawley, our buddy Joe, the Bowl, Joe Brawley, had a piece on Sunday morning, and I'm not sure how this got to print, because the whole piece was based around how Mickey Hart is holding Tyrone back, and he says it's increasingly clear that the problem is Mickey. Mickey is right and everyone else is wrong, permanently, period. Or rather, Mickey is right and everyone else is prejudiced against him. So, like, I mean, he tells an anecdote of a friend of his ringing him on the way back from Tuam, friend from Tyrone, and of course every piece has got some anecdote of somebody telling him, which obviously backs up what his argument is. And this is just this,
imagine him in court.
These anecdotes are just out of control at this stage, because how he can meet this many people that perfectly fit into his piece, I'll never know, because I don't meet these people on my weekly routine. But Joe is,
you're not as social as Joe.
Yeah, Joe's a man of the people. Right, so the friend said to him, the arrogance is incredible. Unbelievable how this friend just completely right. And then he says, I feel sorry for the players, to really just play on the emotion of the whole thing.
That friend from Tyrone hated Mickey Hart as well.
So he hated Mickey Hart as well. So, like, Mickey Hart had been on during the week talking about Joe calling him the barking dog. Barking dog won't bite you because he's just talking all the time. And really silly stuff from two fellas who should probably know better to be having a war of words like this in the media. But The reason I'm bringing this up is because Joe's whole piece was based around the fact that Mickey Hart wasn't flexible and that, you know, he was the problem. And then very night before, Tyrone against the All-Ireland champions clearly showed another side of their play. So, like, I mean, I don't know how that was actually published, because it was outdated and Joe obviously had written it before the Saturday night. So when we saw the evidence of Sunday night or Saturday night, now obviously that was the replayed game, so you would have been finding this out maybe between 9 and 10 on the Saturday night, and you're like, Joe, will you write another piece? I will in my arse. Right? So maybe they just sent it on out because it was completely outdated by Sunday morning. You can't be reading that stuff and knowing how Tyrone changed it around and then writing a piece that's completely attacking Mickey Hart for not being flexible. So I don't know, look, it's just pure Joe, but maybe it's a difficult one if he didn't have time to write another piece, or can you pull one that late? I'm not an editor, so I don't know. But anyways, we'll leave that there. Donegal and Galway, I was watching this, lads, and I know Galway won and Donegal lost, but I'm a lot more positive about Donegal than I am about Galway. Donegal have a clear system of play. They have a target man in McBrearty. They also have changed their style of play. I wrote down a couple of, and Colin Cooper showed them on League Sunday last night, 10th minute, O'Reilly into McBrearty, long ball into the corner. McBrearty's able to take his man on, go out onto his left and swing one over. I'd say McBrearty just can't believe his luck. 36 minute long ball to McHugh, or by Ryan McHugh, who loves to run the ball, but decided I'm going to give it into McBrearty. And this is all Kilcar fellas. McBrearty lays it off to his brother over the bar.
Yeah, that was a really good score.
Then you have McNeilish started the second half. McBrearty got two in a row. He's in the centre forward position. He breaks quickly for it. He gets it, turns around a bit like a quarterback, and gives it out to McBrearty, who gives it to Stephen and swings over another ball. There's loads of examples of this. McNeilish into McBrearty. They're all looking for McBrearty, right? And it's an obvious game plan, but Galway, using a sweeper, weren't able to stop it. So that'll tell you it works. And like you look at Mayo, it's so obvious that their target man is Andy Moran and they're looking to get it to him, initial ball, work off it. Yeah. That's obvious, but no one's able to defend against it because he's brilliant movement and they've got good kick passers. So Donegal have this with McBrearty now, and when Murphy comes back, he'll be a foil where the sweeper won't know who to follow and these balls will get even better. So Donegal have a clear system of play now, and this only after two games that they've changed it around. They're trying to change it, they're incorporating new players. They've lost their two games by a point. I'd be very, very positive about where Donegal are going in general. Like, I mean, there's no doubt about that. It's not easy to change the habits of 3 years of just being a running team and having that. And McBrearty looks a really, really good player. McNeilish is brilliant. Murphy's coming back. They're not in that bad of a place at all, Donegal.
No, they certainly aren't. They've been a little bit unfortunate, actually. They've lost, I mean, I think to lose to Kerry by a point as well. So, I mean, like, to lose your first two games by a point is probably frustrating from Donegal's perspective, particularly when they possibly could have won both games. But McBrearty's form is very impressive. 10 points the first day, 9 points again the other day. And, you know, he's looking really, really sharp. And they're getting him into the game more because, you know, I'd say it was very frustrating for him for a number of seasons.
I hated it. Yeah. He was actually turned into not a guaranteed starter. I'd say he'd lost the will to live. Not sounding like trying to sound like Joe Brolly here, but I'd say he had. And now his movement is so good because he knows it's coming in.
Well, that's the big thing. When you're playing in the inside forward line and you're kind of guessing, is it going to be kicked? Is it not going to be kicked? It puts doubt in your mind. Will I go? Will I not? You know, it's a disaster. Yeah. It's a terrible position to be for an inside forward, because what you want to know is they get to this position, the ball is coming and you are alert and you're on your way. And it just feeds into how sharp you can be, just even your focus and everything for a game. If you're expecting the ball to come, you're always on your toes, you're ready for it. And it definitely improves the form, just the complete approach for an inside forward. I mean, you know, it's kind of, you don't really mind sometimes whether the ball is good, bad or indifferent, as long as the ball is just being put into the zone where you have a chance even to fight for the ball. Now, at county level, obviously has to be a lot better than that, with cover defenders back. And Donegal, it's, again, that crossfield ball, when it's done right, it's impossible to defend against when there's depth onto it. Like, the difference is McBrearty is, he's not kind of running out the field at an angle, he's running parallel, you know, along the lines, along the 14, along the 21. So once there's depth on that pass and there's, you know, it's dropping in over the head of the sweeper, he can't get back to cover it. Do you know that kind of way? You can't intercept the ball because there's just that distance on it. And with McBrearty's pace, very few players are going to beat him out in front to a ball, and particularly when he's starting in the centre, or he can go both sides. You know what I mean? He's able to go to both wings, so it's very difficult for a defender marking him one-on-one. And look, Donegal are getting decent success out of it, and yeah, they're definitely going to pick up victories.
Yeah, he's breaking to the wing a lot, but you can understand him breaking to the wing a lot because there's a sweeper in front of him. But he breaks to the wing where he's turning and he's on his left, and he's so accurate, and he has a long range shot that breaking to the wing isn't all that bad for him.
And like, I've got a friend from Donegal who texts me and said McBrearty had lost the will to live in the last couple of years. But like, it is, it's very exciting for them going forward. And as you say, Cian, bringing Michael Murphy back is going to make even like a bigger world of difference.
And he's guaranteed to start and stay inside now, isn't he?
I don't think we
always used to have the debate, will Michael Murphy stay inside? And with McGuinness and Gallagher, he'd stay inside for 5 minutes and then spend the other 65 outside.
They've got enough outside now, I think. Like, enough boys to compete. They're all getting bigger, stronger. The only thing I will say, and it's the same with Tyrone, it's like it's great seeing them going forward, but they look so lax sometimes in the other direction when they were trying to defend. And that goal by Brannigan wasn't good enough. Like, McCain just comes straight through the middle, one hand pass. Brannigan runs past two people.
One of them
don't even
slipped,
bother.
Did they?
That was the third guy who slipped in, just bad footwork from him. But nobody even pointed to him or put a hand on him and just go straight through.
It was deplorable defending because it wasn't even a good move.
Well, Conan, do you remember last week we spoke about how, you know, good defenders spot the danger?
Yeah.
I mean, somebody who's playing full back in that position, I mean, you know, you want them tight to his man. But when he sees that, hold on a minute, yeah. if I run out of here, there's nobody in this zone. Sometimes you have to just say, well, I have to protect the goals here. So if my man runs out to the corner and gets the ball and kicks it over the bar under no pressure, well, I have to cover the centre here because I can see runners coming. Mm. I mean, like, that's yeah. just a case of blindly your man, following your man.
Your man, Caelan Ward, is like that. That's how he plays. He plays cornerback, he's played centre-back. He's a bit of an all-or-nothing type fella.
Yeah, he's a real man-to-man.
He's
yeah.
a real man-to-man fella. And you're right, he completely ran out of that space yeah. and left it wide open for it. Like, cause, I mean, because it wasn't a good move. There was nothing on. And then your man Cook, who was very impressive in the first half, just breaks forward and all of a sudden one hand pass to Flanagan. Like, this yeah. was not a worked move in any way, shape or form.
No, it just... Look, again, it's frustrating. It's stupid to be just constantly saying it's inexperience, because it's not. Like, if you're playing football, you should understand these things.
Yeah.
And you should understand if you're a really good midfielder or you're an intelligent halfback, you know, you should have enough game intelligence on the pitch to spot the danger and cover the gap.
Yeah. I mean, or else, as a manager, don't play Caelan Ward, who's a bald headed man marker, at full back, because full back has to, like centre back, again, these are specialised positions.
Well, again, you know, you can't entirely just pin it on one person, because somebody in that attack for Donegal, there was definitely more than one defender whose man was no threat. So they had to be able to see, Jesus, there's a big gap in here behind. Yeah. I need to go in here. Somebody needs to go there. And if you're on the pitch and you say, somebody needs to go here, well, then do it yourself. You know what I mean? Like, that's... I just don't think that would not happen to Dublin. If Keane O'Sullivan was on the pitch, Keane O'Sullivan would be able to spot it. Like, Owen Harrington, who I play club football with, played with Meath for years, he just instinctively would know where to go in that position. He just knows, would have the defensive instinct to just read the situation very quickly and make that decision so that you're not opened up. You know, it's just game intelligence
yeah.
on the pitch.
Yeah, no, it is.
The problem is then that we see someone like me, like, would see that and be like, oh, well, they need to go back to having more defenders back there, which they don't, just have better defenders there who yeah. are going to snuff that sort of thing out and follow your men.
I think this will happen over time, because these fellas, Donegal minors and under 21s, all played the same way as the seniors. So all these fellas were like, I've got extra cover here. So maybe this is something that they need to learn and need to understand over the course of a league, that the way I used to play and maybe stay with my man while somebody else was able to cover me, or, you know, like, I mean, maybe they're all learning how to yeah. actually change around within this new system.
Well, that is a good point, because I don't believe it's a systematic problem. Like, that's not a system problem if something like that happens. Nope. I think if your approach is to go man to man, right, when everybody is in their, we'll call it, traditional positions, and the ball is being played or being kicked in, man to man is the way to go. But when the play gets slowed up or it gets disjointed, or you have, you know, six players over in a huddle on one side of the pitch, then all of a sudden man-to-man marking is pointless. It's irrelevant. It's not the way to go. It's that's when the switch needs to happen to zonal, and to be able to decide where are the gaps here in our defence. How do we shore this up? And that's about players shuttling over and back, and not necessarily just blindly following a forward, because good forwards will drag defenders out of position. They will say, right, I'm dead set. You know, the oldest one in the book is, you know, if a guy is coming down the middle in possession carrying the ball, what do? Everybody gets out of his way.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, do defenders, that you're giving the defender a decision to make. Now, it's the same sort of thing when the play gets disjointed like that. You can't, if you blindly follow your man, sure, he could be taking you out to the corner flag with no intention of getting the ball because he sees his buddy, the far side, is free.
Yeah.
You know, like, if you're playing in one corner, you drag, you know, you oftentimes drag a defender away to allow your wing forward space to move into.
Yeah.
I mean, it's about a defender making that decision. Okay, this fella's gone off here, he's no threat, but I can see that the gap is going to appear here if I leave. And good defenders then anticipate that. And when the ball is kicked, they just catch it on their chest and fingers pointed at the guy who kicks it. But it's good defending. It's just reading the situation, anticipating what's going on and making that decision.
Yeah, and like, I mean, I remember under Liam Kearns, we'd have a sideline ball move around the 45 where someone would be on it off the outside of their boot and everyone would run towards them shouting for the ball, obviously, like they really want it. And all the while a midfielder would be coming up on the outside and would be given diagonally across to him. I think it worked once and it was a lovely feeling when it worked, but it's yeah. nothing basic. It's just banking on the fact that defenders are just going to blindly follow their men. And it's obviously more difficult now with the defensive systems. You don't get, there's extra defenders there. But, like, I mean, that is obvious that. But then again, with a lot of managers, if you do, you can't do homework on the opposition as much for league games because it's so early in the year, you don't have time. But in the Championship, like, McGuinness always used to talk about patterns of play, and he'd watch Dublin over and over again and try and see what are they doing over and over again that would make me believe that these are this is a game plan of theirs. So he's constantly watching it and saying, right, he goes to him, he goes to him. Is this repeated? Is this repeated? And he was doing this, and this is what pretty much has to be done. Now, the reason I say it is, I only watched Galway once yesterday, right? So I can't say this is perfect tactical analysis. But from my point of view, Galway have no attacking game plan whatsoever. There is no patterns to their play going forward. Like, I mean, it's so disjointed. It's basically hoping for inspiration from Comer or Walsh. Now, Walsh in the big games has been found wanting a little bit, and like he was outstanding, kicked some scores there that like I would never have been able to kick, but we know he has that talent off both feet. Comer's an absolute beast of a man. He came out once or twice, took it upon himself to take 1-2 and score an individual point. But that's what these are. They're individual points, and Galway seem to be banking on these individual points. At least we saw some form of pattern with Donegal. There was no pattern with Galway. It's just play. It's just like, what are we doing here? Will we run it? Will we kick it? Are we using Comer enough? Maybe we're not. Are we playing Comer inside? Is Comer drifting out? It's all over the place. I don't see. Towards the end, they were really good when Donegal were desperate and they played that counter-attacking game well. Their finishing was bad at the other end. But throughout the game, it's almost like they're making it up as they go along. Like, genuinely, you see, we talked last year about them having a plan from the gate, from the throw-in, where they had these set moves, and they did that with Comer. He got a point off the throw-in again. And that's an obvious pattern. But I don't see regular ball into Comer, good regular ball, to say, right, they're using him, they're running off him. He seems to be stranded in there, and the only time he gets in the ball is when he comes out looking for it. It just seems to be all over the place a little bit for me. But we don't actually have time to get into that, lads, because we've gone way over time, as per usual. And we have a very special guest, Lee Keegan, coming up next, and he's going to sit in on Performance of the Weekend.
Conan Doherty is a fantastic analyst, and I mean, I really heed what he would say in your programme.
I think Tyrone are going to win. I'm going to go with them. As much as I predicted Dublin to win the All-Ireland at the start of the year, I just think Tyrone are going too well. They're unaffected by the other team. Too well set up. I think they've been preparing for Dublin for 2 years. They're ready for them. I'm going to go with them. Yeah.
All right, Performance of the Weekend here, and we have a special guest, like I mentioned at the end of the last part. Lee Keegan is in the studio. Lee, how's it going?
Good, now yourself. Thanks for having me today.
Now, you're not here because you love us or anything. You're here because you're promoting Sports Physio Ireland Clinic.
Correct.
In Dublin 2. It's Joey Boland's new business, and if you want to know more about it, you go to www.sportsphysioireland.com. So that's what you've been doing all day. You're at the end of the day of your promotional.
This is the easiest part, Willie.
Well, we're going to help you. We said we'd keep it a little bit light for you, and we'll get you in on Performance of the Weekend, so you can give Performance of the Weekend.
Perfect.
So I don't know, do you follow the league outside of your own Mayo games? Like, I mean, or do you try to get away from it when you're not playing? Like, will you sit down and watch TG4 on the Sunday after watching Mayo?
No, very much, I suppose, whatever's going on at the time, I try and keep up to date, maybe through Twitter or whatever's on the internet. So otherwise, I kind of keep out of the loop and just kind of clear the head and rest at home and relax and watch some normal stuff and listen to a few tunes at home. But no, I wouldn't be one now to be watching too many highlights. Maybe ourselves if we had a bad game, which was
exactly
Saturday night. So
Dancing with the Stars you were watching.
Yeah. Well, maybe when I'm asked that, I might start watching more of it.
Who's going to win, Lee? Who's going to win?
I have no opinion, just in case.
Well, this being a GEA show, is Anna or Mark? Right, so that's all we know about. Right, a couple of things to clear up before we get into Performance of the Weekend. You don't have multiple sclerosis. This was a weird rumour that went around, I think it was before Christmas. I actually heard it, and I was told, like, it's crazy with rumours. It's like, I was told that this came straight from a nurse in the hospital and it was meant to be kept on the QT.
That's her fired in, yeah.
But like, I mean, when did you become made aware that this was going all over the country, and how did you deal with that?
I suppose I was made aware probably a week or two after it kind of spread. To be honest, I'm such a kind of horizontal featherhead during normal day life, I don't really pay too much attention, so I didn't kind of take much notice or hear much about it. So partner came home one day from school and just said she'd heard a rumour saying that your health was deteriorating and you had this and that. So I was like, Christ, that's the first to me. And then obviously it kind of started going out kind of first locally and then nationally kind of became a bit of a headline then, which was a bit disappointing for not me, because I'm fine with it. I was comfortable, as I said, I knew myself there was nothing wrong with me in terms of that, but it's more, I suppose, my friends and my family having to answer questions, or people ask them, how is he, what's wrong with him, and this and that. So it was annoying from that point of view. I don't know where it originated from, so, which is, and I don't really want to know, to be honest, because as I said, it was annoying enough that I had to kind of publicly say something that I was okay, and yeah. I am okay, maybe not in the head at times, but no, like, I suppose I've mentioned briefly that there is people in Westford that do suffer from it, so for them to come up to my mother or father giving a bit of advice or they need help with that was I think that was a bit of a more of annoyance to my family, saying, no, well, no, he's okay, and then for them to be offering help is annoying for them too, because they're obviously suffering from a serious health issue. And so the thing is, if I did have it, it's me that has to deal with it. So, but yeah, then if I don't...
But you're obviously in hospital with your hips, right? So this is obviously where someone saw you in hospital, some troublemaker, and decided... Like, I mean, this is how it happens. Like, these people have a screw loose that someone who would
Well,
just
I was in hospital last year as well with cellulitis. So, again, that might have been something that kind of rolled on as well. I was in hospital 4 nights for the replay of the Roscommon game. So, again, you just know where our nature... It could be just something someone said, maybe... Innocently, that, and might even said MS. It could have been something that
cellulitis, kind of, so, was Chinese whispers turned into multiple sclerosis.
But sure, like GA, we love rumors, don't we?
Well, we do, so. But like, I mean, would you not have come out on Twitter maybe and actually put a stop to that, or how? Like, I mean, how did
I did publicly? You know, I did a piece with Mike Finnerty, I suppose, for the club stars. Now we always have our club stars in the year, maybe December, January. So Mike asked me to come in and just kind of help promote it, because we had a tragic death in Westport. Neil O'Neill was a big kind of head of that. So I helped Mike just kind of, I suppose, do the promotional part of it. So Mike just asked me, do you want to say something publicly, and I'm kind of happy I did, just kind of cleared up pretty quickly. And I suppose for people probably not around nationwide, but maybe there was people kind of overseas asking questions too, and friends like that, so it was just nice to clear that for them as well and say, listen, my health is perfect anyway. So
yeah, well, talking about your health, it's not perfect because you've had two hip operations, right?
So getting like perfect.
Like, how do you get to a point where you're getting two hip operations? Because earlier in the show we talked about young Clifford and young Sean O'Shea, and they're playing Sigerson, they're playing National League, trying to break onto a team, then they're back playing Sigerson, and we're wondering, Derek, there's been an explosion of hip operations, and like, is it this wear and tear at a young age, 19, 20, 21, where you're being dragged at under 21 level, colleges, club, you've so many teams looking for you, like, when you go to the doctor and the specialist, where is he saying these issues are coming from?
I don't know if it's more you're on about the younger guys there. I suppose it's very much on your load and maybe a training, or for me it was the constant twisting and turning, maybe within, I suppose, training or maybe in games and stuff like that, so they were causing me quite discomfort. So like, mine was just, actually, believe it or not, I know we were talking about hip, but like, it was a pretty basic keyhole operation, like, so there was nothing kind of, you know, major that had to be done. It was just, all I got kind of was just the bone shaved of each side.
Shaved, yeah.
So therefore I got more mobility and flexibility within that joint, because it was catching off a spurred bone already, so that's where it came from. But just chatting with the consultant, he just said it was the constant turn and twisting, probably on the hard grind over time, and that's, you know, something that I had to deal with. Unfortunately, it's something I didn't want to have to get done.
But you run straight down the right wing.
That's
there.
What I thought too. Like, maybe it's somewhere else. Maybe some pub in Westford or something. But
sidestepping from one pub to the other.
But no. I just went on total recommendation, and to be honest, I'm really happy I got done. I got good news there a couple of weeks ago from my consultant in Waterford. He said everything looks pretty good there. And like, since I'm back running the pitch, I've had no pain issues, and like, it's very comfortable to start moving again, which I'm very happy with. But it just kind of made me more aware of my management in terms of how to deal with my body, and maybe, you know, take a step back sometimes from doing the extra stuff rather than doing less. Sometimes is doing more.
Exactly. So, and you're comfortable enough in your position on the squad now. I'm sure Stephen trusts you enough that you can say.
It depends what you ask me today.
It's actually gas, those keyhole surgeries, like how little of an invasion there is. Like, I mean, there's just a tiny little scar. They get in there, they clean it out, you're out, and you're not out for the rest of it. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's a really quick recovery from it, because it's not really intrusive.
No, and that's something he highlighted to me when I first met him before I got surgery, and he made that very clear that that was something that was going to happen. And I, to be honest, the surgery was only about an hour and 10 minutes, like, so I was literally in and out before I knew it. Like, again, now obviously a bit of a slower operation trying to get back walking in terms of stuff like that. So, but to be honest, I've done really well with my rehab. I'm back, for me anyway, I think I'm back well ahead of schedule in terms of what I was meant to be doing to what I'm doing now. Like I said, I'm back on the pitch running, which is a great positive for me. And you know, I'm just looking to get back. Well, I'm not looking forward to get back to some of the hard slog with the lads, because the lungs are they're struggling at the moment. But no, you know, I'm coming into the good season now. We've had three or four games under belt there, so I hope to get back into some stage for the league and try and get some minutes in my legs.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And obviously Mayo had a you've had an all right start. You've actually won your first one, like I mean, and then you lost one, so it's not it's not the end of the world. So
early doors.
Early doors in the league, yeah. Right, performance of the weekend. We want to get you involved in this because one player I really impressed me on Saturday night was Micheál Burns, Kerry wing forward, and he's just a little speedster. And it's not that he's a little speedster, plays with his head down. He gives lovely little tasty little passes into the full forward line, and I don't know, the last two games I think he's been a huge addition, and maybe you'll be watching these fellas a little bit more in the position that you play.
Yeah, well actually I spotted him myself and I suppose I just kind of keep up with some of the club stuff anyway, and I suppose with Dr. Coke doing well most years, he was actually a guy I kind of picked out previously. I thought he was very good during the run to the Munster final this year. A guy that often chips in with 2 or 3 points a game. So definitely a guy. Now I didn't know as he actually got selected until the first National League game myself anyway, and once I was made aware, I have to say, like yourself, I was really impressed with him Saturday night. He really like, I know the pitch was in bad shape, but he really covered a lot of ground there Saturday night, chipped in another 2 points against us, which is huge bonus from a half forward. So definitely he was one guy that I picked out the weekend, along with I think Paul Geaney had a very good game as well, particularly in the second half when they were kind of under the cosh. He got a couple of balls and put them over the bar, which is at key times for Kerry. But as I think overall the performance is very good against us, to be honest. I thought some of the young guys really stepped up. I was really impressed with some of the young guys really taking the game to a lot of our, I suppose, more experienced guys, and thoroughly deserved their victory on Saturday night.
Yeah, look, they did. We won't go back over too much of that. Paddy McBrearty, Conan, we've talked about already in the show, really reveling in this new kind of Donegal style where he's making breaks and he knows he's getting the ball when he makes breaks. It's not like he's making breaks, not getting the ball, getting pissed off, not making the break then, and it's a vicious circle of like, I want to move but I know I'm not going to get it. So he's loving all this.
And what it allows him to do is make mistakes and hit a couple of wides, and it's not that big a deal because he's getting another ball straight after it.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
All of a sudden we're focusing on the scores he's hitting.
Scored 9 points again, didn't he? So.
9 and 10. Yeah. I think it was 10 the first day. And it's actually interesting that he's, like, I mean, if you want to be overcritical, or people might be overcritical and say, oh, they're over-dependent on Andy Moran or on Paddy McBrearty. But you're over-dependent, like some people would say, you're over-dependent on Andy Moran. But, like, I mean, Andy Moran's always free, so you give it to him. So why would you not overuse? You know what I mean? His movement is so good that McBrearty can be that same pivotal target man for Donegal. And it's not a case of overusing him. It's that if he's free, we're going to give it to him.
Getting the most out of him as well.
I'm sure he's the best player in the park to get the ball to. He's their strike man. Like, so of course, if he makes 5 or 10 yards from him, if you don't pick him out, then you're the bigger fool for not giving it to him. So therefore, Donegal are reaping the benefit of giving him the ball early when he's free, and he's getting good credibility because he's scoring big, and that's what you want from your big name players.
Talk to us about the value of having somebody in there like that. That's always shown, especially you as a wing back, or even you've played centre forward in the half forward line last year. Is having that fella that even if you're not the one giving it, you know that goes into Andy Moore, and you can almost take the chance to be gone and take that pop pass off him. You know what I mean? There's a value all over the field of having that kind of pivotal full forward that the game goes through him, but there's so much value of knowing that the ball's going to go through him.
He opens up everything from, I suppose, from a half forward to half back, making a hard run or laying the ball off them in a free position, because he tracks men as well. So, but Andy's very clever in terms of his running. He doesn't run straight lines out all day. It's left, right. It's constantly moving, trying to get free, and if he doesn't get the ball, someone else is free because he's taking another man with him. And I suppose a prime example of Andy was probably my goal in the All-Ireland final, where two men got sucked to him and I just made the easy run for him to give it to me, like, you know. So because the lad's given the ball, he knows he's going to be free, and he just laid it off for me, and the rest was then kind of. But that's the way he is. He just has good game management, like, and he knows how his body works to make them runs.
What's that feeling like now? Because that's twice you've done that, goals in the All-Ireland final, and probably the one last year was more sensational in that it was in the second half when you had a load of momentum and, like, you business-like run back to your position. You're a bit like the Dublin players, don't over celebrate them. But what are you like? You must be really ready to jump out of your skin like that. I can only imagine what that feeling must be like.
I suppose at the time, as you mentioned there, momentum is a huge thing. You're thinking probably there's 7 minutes left on the clock, you know, great time to get a goal, you know, you have momentum. But I kind of said earlier, if you looked at I did look at the Dublin players, none of them actually seemed to bat an eyelid. It was just
really,
it was just normal. And I think the next play they scored a point, so that just shows you what the way they were thinking. There was no reaction thinking, oh, not again, this is a goal here, this is going to go against us. They just literally, like you said, workmanlike, they went straight back to their process or the routine.
And do you remember running back after scoring that goal, noticing that?
No, just got out their process. Next play. And
you would love to see one of them given out to the other one.
Well, it's a sign that you know you're getting on top, and there might be a crack there. But you know, they've been in that position so many times. We're against us in particular, that they just, you know, they play to that very last minute, and you know they're never a beaten team. That's the hardest thing about Dublin. They're never actually beaten. And I thought when that goal went in, I thought this is it. This is the moment now. We need to start seizing this opportunity. But again, they went up, and I think it was James McCarthy got the next score, which is huge. And then they just took it from there again, which is very unfortunate for us.
Yeah, it was unfortunate. And yeah. The game ended on the GPS gate. Talk to us about that.
I suppose that's something that, you know, I think GA has probably gone very much talked about cynicism and, you know, foul play and win at all costs. And it was evident again the weekend with a couple more teams doing the same thing to win games and close games out. So it's something that's not new, but you know, I suppose when you're looking at your last or your fourth All Ireland defeat, you know, you're thinking, what can I do to, I suppose, prevent it or help our team? Or unfortunately, Dean Rock didn't seem to bat an eyelid either. He stayed over the barrel. Like, don't fair play to him. That's him doing his routine as normal. And you know, the ball's still over the black spot. So you have to give him massive credit. Like, and not even for me, from the crowd, the whole pressure that was on that kick. And he did it so effortlessly.
And how easy is it to take off that GPS? Like, we're subtly in front of 80,000 people.
And I find it hard to put on a train because the gap is too small.
I think we were the one place in the country where we were all like, we probably would have done the same thing to try and put him off.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt about that. Right, Cian Mackey, I want to give him a shout, lads, because he's a player I always liked, and I'm wondering, did you mark him, Lee? Because
I have.
He scored two off the bench last week against Clare, and then came off at the bench at the weekend and scored four. Such an industrious player, such a great player, and I'm wondering what it's like to mark him, because he always seems to pop up in acres of space, and it's like, how does he always seem to get space?
Yeah, actually, I have marked him, funny enough, I marked him within the international rules before, and he gave me an absolute roasting, to be honest. He was, as you said, he popped up everywhere. I think he scored 4 points in the first two quarters. So a guy that, and the killer with him is, if you give him kind of a few yards, he's going to kick it over the barrel because he's very accurate.
Yeah.
And the other thing is with him, he's a lot of pace from a half forward line, so he's making them direct runs at you, and he gets any bit of space, say there's 10 yards left or right, he's going to take you on regardless. And that's very hard for a defender when you're on your back foot. So a guy that's been, he's a huge asset for Cavan. As you mentioned, he came off the bench twice, so maybe he's more of an impact player, is he?
Like, he's injury prone as well, so he might be coming back from a little bit of injury.
Good scores for Cavan there. I'm sure they're badly needed.
Yeah, they hammered, absolutely hammered Louth at the weekend. We're going to give London a shout out. Conan, they beat Wicklow, who have not had a great start to the year under John Evans, but they play in all their games at home this year, so I don't think that's going to be the last game potentially that London are going to win.
And in fairness to Turlough O'Brien last week, the Carlow manager said that London are going to beat some teams out here after, like, they got it tight out there. I mean, no, Carlow were motoring well, but he predicted that London are going to beat some teams out here in the very next week. 6 days later they turn around and beat somebody.
Yeah, so like, I mean, you've been over there playing London, and a bit of travelling and the novelty, I suppose, and then you're in the hotel room and you're in London, and
we nearly got caught in 2011.
You nearly did,
so,
James Horan nearly didn't get sacked.
He's our worst for manager now, so
it could have been all over before it started. Roscommon, giving a shout out. That's their second week in a row to come back from the absolute dead. 4 down against Meath and came back in injury time, and they were 3-9 to 12 points down with 5 minutes left of regular time and beat Tipperary away by a point. So, like, I mean, you're looking at this, Lee, and you're thinking, this is Roscommon, a bit stronger than they were last year. You know, making these comebacks, are you thinking these are a coming force, we need to be kind of on our guard with these lads, or are you thinking, well, in Croke Park we blew them away, and at the back of their minds they'll know that it can't be us?
Well, I think everyone's there forgetting we drew with them the first
game,
and they had a chance to win it then as well, so, you know, that's the other side of it. But they're a very young team. Age profile is great in Roscommon, and
it's a good sign for them, isn't it?
And Division 2 is hugely competitive as well. So, as I said, they got the experience in Division 1 last year. I know they went down, but that experience obviously brought them to Connacht final as well. So I like Kevin McStay. I think he's very current what he does with them. I think he's got a good bunch of lads there that came through minor and under 21 production, so he's going to have a good couple of years with them. So between them and obviously Galway win their first two league games, Connacht's looking pretty strong again.
It's a great Connacht championship, isn't it? Like, I mean, you can make an argument, say it's the most exciting, the most unpredictable now, because Galway have won the last, Galway won 2 years ago, Roscommon, you've won it before. It's being shared around, you know, and Ulster always was the idea. Connacht, when you were dominating, was like, well, that's an Ulster round, forget about that, you forget about Munster, you forget about Leinster. There was nothing, only the North, Now Tyrone look to be by far the strongest team, and the one that's actually harder to call is Connacht.
Yeah, and that's, I suppose that's the way it's gone the last couple of years. Gaul have really upped their game. They've beaten us the last 2 years home and away, so it just shows where they're thinking. Kevin Welch done a great job there as well. So as I said, Roscommon pushed us to the collar there in the first quarter final last year, which is a bit too hairy for us at times. You know, they could have scraped that game as well, and you know, at the end of it, they could have deserved it. If, like I said, any team had won by a point, you wouldn't have argued so much. But yeah, Connacht's going to be interesting this year. We're looking forward to Gaul on May 13th, so that's more or less our big game there. So
very big smile on Lee Keegan's face when he says we're waiting for Gaul there, because this is a podcast and you can't see him, but that makes me think Mayo are really waiting for Gaul this year. Okay, listen, well, you're the special guest pundit this week, so you can pick the performance of the weekend. So you have Paddy McBrearty, you have Micheál Burns, you have Keane Mackey, you have Roscommon, or you have London.
I would probably go for Paddy McBrearty, because I actually seen that game and I watched him last week as well, and for a guy that's been around as long as he is, I know he's still young and still producing the goods the way he is. I have to say it's a bad sign for Lava's defender if he's shooting the lights out this early, and he's only going to get better as the year goes on. He's got a left foot, a serious one there, so he needs a lot of watching. And yeah, I have to say his 9 points the last day was incredible. Some of his striking is just amazing to watch.
Yeah, and another way you get that poxy job of marking the Dange man and the other team, are you thinking, right, I'm going to note down what McBrearty's doing in case Rochford screws me over?
My hips are starting to get sore again.
See, that's a twisting and turning since you went into the full back line.
I can't play cornerback in
I get a nosebleed in there.
You stick to that right half back, run down the wing, flick it over, and then kind of do your arched run back down, and then you're grand.
No smile.
Lee Keegan, thanks very much.
Thanks,
we'll be back on Thursday with a preview show. Good luck.
I'm not finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing houses for f***ing 10 years.
The GAA Hour with Colin Parkinson is sponsored by AIB, proudly backing club and county.